Like a chrysalis, we're emerging from the economy of the Industrial Revolution. An economy confined to and limited by the Earth's physical resources, into the economy in mind, in which there are no bounds on human imagination, and the freedom to create is the most precious natural resource.
Welcome to the Soul of Enterprise, Business in the Knowledge Economy. Sponsored by Sage, transforming the way people think and work, enabling their organizations to thrive. I'm Ed Kless with my friend and co-host Ron Baker, and folks, on today's show, we have our interview with Scott Reeb. Hey, Ron, how's it going?
Great, Ed. I love talking to innovative lawyers, and no, that's not an oxymoron.
Not for today, certainly. Well, let me read them in and we'll get started with this interview. Scott Reeb is known as America's legal coach and is the official Zig Ziglar small business lawyer, a Ziglar Legacy certified trainer, and has over 20 years experience as an attorney. For the last two decades, Scott has been helping business owners, entrepreneurs, coaches, and service providers to shatterproof their businesses and succeed in professional world. Scott is a firm believer that seeking legal advice doesn't have to be intimidating or expensive. If we treat lawyers like primary care doctors, closer listeners of the Soul of Enterprise will know exactly where we're going with this one. Instead of ER doctors developing the Access Plan legal service for his firm, Reeb Law. Welcome to the Soul of Enterprise, Scott Reeb.
Hey, Ed. Thanks, Ron. Thanks for having me.
No, we're happy to have you on. So let's share with our audience just a little bit about your background. You went into become an attorney, so talk a little bit about that and then bring us up to today with what's going on with Reeb Law.
Yeah, I've been doing this a long time. When I hear that two decades, it kind of makes me feel a little dated. But back in the early 90s, I was in sales and had my own sales agency with a major telecom carrier and ran into a problem with a contract and decided, you know what? I don't want to make that mistake again. And so I did what any sane person would do. I went to law school. And so I headed off to OU. And spent three great years at OU learning all about how to think like a lawyer, and then got out and have been trying to learn how to practice law ever since. Our firm now is really focused on helping small business owners grow, scale, and protect their businesses. My belief is that small business is the best vehicle to achieve your life goals and dreams, and so my job is to help you protect those dreams, and I just have a blast doing it.
All right. And OU, for those of you who don't know, is Oklahoma University. Scott and I are practically neighbors. We're in Denton. That's a little Texas lingo, Scott. We got to explain that sometimes who OU is. But recently, I guess it's within the last, three or four years, you've transitioned over to a subscription model. When did that happen?
You know, that it's actually been longer than that. In 2012, I had a vision for a different way to practice law. Not because it would be better for me, although it ended up being, but because I had a problem and that I was getting repeat business, which you would think isn't a problem for a business owner, but it really is. They were making the same kind of mistakes over and over again and then spending way too much money to fix them. And I had to do kind of a really deep dive inside. Is it, you know, what's wrong? Why are they not calling me? Is it me? Is it my personality? They don't like me? And what I came up with was I was okay. They liked me all right, but it was the way that I billed my clients, and lawyers traditionally bill by the hour, that they didn't like. It was creating a disincentive for them to call me and ask crazy questions that might keep them out of trouble. Instead, they'd flip a coin, dial a friend, or Google it, anything but call me. And so I had this vision for an on-demand system where they had a set monthly fee and could ask any crazy question they wanted without having to worry about getting billed. And so I went looking for a coach to help me build it. After about three coaches, I found one that understood my vision. And in 2012, we launched what's now the Access Plan.
2012, that was. Okay, so talk to me a little bit about, so you were a partner at a firm, at two firms, and it was classic billing by the hour stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I started out doing high-end commercial litigation in federal courts, a lot of intellectual property things where I was on phone conferences with engineers for hours after hour, having no idea really what they were talking about, billing clients, and not feeling like I was helping people. And I transitioned over the years to where I was working with small business owners and litigating things, and I was helping people more. But again, I got frustrated because they just kept doing silly things like signing contracts that hadn't been reviewed by a lawyer, creating contracts that they downloaded from the internet instead of having lawyers help them create them. And so I made that huge pivot, and it really kind of changed everything. But I haven't been, my last W-2 paycheck was in 1997. So I've been an owner of a law firm ever since. But this firm, Reeb Law, started in 05, and you know, this one's been all on me.
And it, so you didn't have a partner to convince. That was one of the questions I had. So do you think that would have been more challenging?
Yeah, it would have been more challenging because I dealt with some of those changes before with partners and ended up not being partners anymore. But I still made a mistake because even if you don't have partners, you have stakeholders. And I had people on my team that I did not communicate my vision well to. They might say not at all. And those people are no longer here. They left as about the second year of it, they bailed on me. And for a while, I was kind of upset with them. But when I really look at it, it was my fault. I had a really good vision for where this thing was going, but I didn't share it with them in a way they could understand and get a hold of to go with me. And I wish I had, because we could be doing some really great stuff together had they stayed. Totally my fault.
So what has been the reaction when you talk about this with some other lawyers? I can guess, but I don't want you to hear you tell it.
You know, early on, it was like, you're crazy. You can make so much more money billing by the hour. Now, people are more interested because they see the life I'm able to lead because I'm not tied to the billable hour. And they get kind of they're getting sick and tired of having to bill everyone and keep track of every 6 minutes of their time. So people are much more open to it. But in 2012, 13, 14, everyone thought I was nuts. I kind of ran under the radar as much as possible because I didn't really want to deal with the criticism. And so I just kind of, we're kind of Denton's best kept secret for several years.
So, and it's expanded out. Do you have any customers that you bill by the hour now at all?
We have two right now because they're in litigation, and I have not figured out how to do complex civil litigation any other way. I've tried a few things that haven't worked, but we haven't taken on any new litigation cases in the last 12 months. I've got some strategic partners that litigate for us, and we refer that out, and then we quarterback it so that we can become either subscription, or it's a project that's outside of the subscription and we put a flat fee on it. If I estimate wrong, I should lose money like every other business owner. And so occasionally I do. I'll bid too low and we don't make any profit.
So what was the inspiration for moving to subscription? What lit the fire for that for you?
Yeah, it really was that I kept having people come back to me. They'd made a mistake that they could have avoided very easily and inexpensively, even by the hour. But they didn't call me. And then we'd get to the end of the case and they'd paid $100,000 in legal fees, for example. We'd won. But when you win in civil court a lot, you don't get your attorney's fees back. So it's like they won and walked out with a win, but they weren't happy. And they kind of had a bad taste in their mouth. And so they'd go away and they're not raving fans of mine, even though I won. And so that was really the inspiration. And then I kind of had, when I started out, I was in an executive suites. It was me and a paralegal, and I had small business owners all around me, and we'd sit and drink coffee and they'd ask me all kinds of questions and we'd all laugh about how they couldn't afford me. So they were happy to be able to pick my brain over coffee. Well, that kind of bugged me that they couldn't afford me. And so we created the plan with levels in it to where new business owners for less than $5,000 a year can have the legal advice they need to make sure they're not making critical mistakes in those formative years.
What made you think subscription though? Well, I mean, that, cause what got you to that point? I mean, I know them not calling, but what got you to say, hey, I think should do subscription.
I got you. Well, that was kind of you kind of started seeing a lot of business coaches popping up at that time, and they were all getting paid on monthly fees. And so I started seeing that, and I had some friends that were kind of in that business. And then, the Dollar Shave Club pops up. And y'all might probably remember they had a viral video that was really funny. And it caught my attention that if people are buying razors now by subscription, you can probably sell anything by subscription. And why not legal services? And that really solved a problem I had of, one, I don't have to keep track of my time anymore. And two, the clients don't have to worry about getting billed when they call me because this is built the subscription. And so we jumped off and tried it, and we were right. People did love it. It didn't take off like I thought. I really thought I'd have 100 clients in the first 12 months. And I can tell you, I didn't have 100 clients on board at one time until we got 10 years in.
That may have been a good thing, though, because in the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're able to build the business. So you actually anticipated a question, but I want to hear your story behind it. Ron and I are huge advocates of eliminating the timesheet as well. So with the exception of those handful of customers that you're doing the litigation for that you are getting rid of that idea, what made you get rid of the timesheet? What was the thought? Because there are people who are doing subscription who still keep timesheets. As bizarre as that sounds.
Yeah, and I can see some merit to doing it because I could track my cost a little more closely if I did keep track of every minute. But we were spending so much time keeping track of our time that I was losing time either with clients or with my family. And by eliminating just that task, I freed up a lot of time. And then we were spending two days a month just billing. No work was getting done. We were just printing off bills, reviewing bills, editing bills, and then sending out the bills. And then I'm not even counting the time that you have to follow up and say, hey, pay your bill. So it just got rid of all the timekeeping, all the billing, and all the accounts receivable at one time. And I mean, I really eliminated a whole employee.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting that one of the questions that Ron and I will often ask an audience that we talk in front of is, you know, what do you think the cost of driving time through your organization is? And it's really somewhere around 10, maybe even 20%. Yep. So we're like, if you want to increase your profit by 10%, get rid of your timesheets.
it's worked for me, and I can run a lot more leaner machine than I could when I was having to keep track of time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Scott, this is great. Unfortunately, we're up against our first break. Want to remind our listeners that they can get a hold of Ron or me by sending an email to asktsoe@verisage.com. Of course, the website is The Soul of Enterprise, where you can see show notes as well as previews to upcoming shows. Our first break, I want to remind you to rate this podcast. You can do that by going to ratethispodcast.com/TSOE. But right now, a word from our sponsors.
Follow Voice America at facebook.com/Voice America for juicy updates from your favorite radio shows and podcasts.
Have you ever read a book that changed your life? I sure have. Have you ever listened to an advertisement for a book so many times that you question the existence of God? Me too. Hello, I'm Greg Kite. I recorded the advertisement for Ron and Ed's book, The Soul of Enterprise Dialogues on Blah, 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 Whatever. And 4 years later, we're all tired of it, especially me. But thankfully, there's a solution. For just $10 a month, you never have to hear my voice again. For a commercial-free version of The Soul of Enterprise, go to patreon.com/TSOE and subscribe now.
Sage provides accountants with compliance, reporting, and analytic solutions to do more for their clients. These solutions include education programs such as the Sage Accountants Network Client Advisory Service Program. This program delivers the tools to create, package, price, market, and deliver additional services to clients, increasing your profitability and delivering more value to your clients. Let Sage help you grow your business by visiting sageaccountantsnetwork.com.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned into The Soul of Enterprise with Ron Baker and Ed Klass. To find out more about our show, visit us on the web at thesoulofenterprise.com. You can also chat with us on Twitter using #AskTSOE. Now, back to The Soul of Enterprise.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking to Scott Reeb of Reeb Law. And Scott, I love this from your bio, that your passion lies in changing the way we view legal counsel from emergency situations to primary care provider relationships. Ed and I have interviewed DPC Doc on this show four times. There's a lot there because DPC doctors are absolutely disruptors in the medical space. And, you know, their job is to keep the patient healthy, not just to cure them when they present with an illness. And that's kind of what you're doing from what I gather looking through your website.
Yeah, exactly. It's a, I'm asking business owners to make a huge paradigm shift because typically you call the lawyer when your house is on fire. And I want them to call me every day instead of once a year. Let's talk daily. I get, you know, we're texting constantly. We do once a month, we do a call with them, you know, over Zoom where it's like, hey, let's catch up. What have you been doing? What's coming up that we can help support so that you can make better, you know, better decisions and do things better. And then it's just kind of a teaching and coaching them on how to think more like I think and ask better questions so that they can avoid some of the potholes that are just exist out there that you can step in if you're not looking, if you're unwary. But yeah, it's that real shift. I mean, I work closely with my primary care. You know, we do blood every quarter. I'm doing a visit with them every time. We're looking at my diet. We're looking at my supplements. And I'm 55 and want to have, you know, a long, active life. And to do that, I know that I've got to be proactive with my health. I can't do what my parents have done, if they're listening, sorry, and just kind of let life happen to you and then wonder when you hit 80 why you can't move.
Right. I was going to ask you if you had a DPC, because most people that do understand just how truly revolutionary it is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, like I said, I'm 55. I think I'm probably closer to 40 in my actual age because of the way I've treated my body over the last 10 years.
And Scott, I'm a recovering CPA who ditched hourly billing in 1989. Okay.
Wow.
When nobody was talking about it, the only book you could find on it was by this guy named Richard Reed, who was a lawyer, written a book for the ABA. And he became my distant mentor. I never met him. I think he's passed away. But I started doing this in 89, not knowing anything. And because the customers loved it. And all I hear from lawyers ever since is, we can't change until the customers demand it. But here's the funny thing. Not one customer out there in the world demanded a DPC doc. The model was brought to them from the supply side, not the demand side. Don't the lawyers have to change, not the customers?
Yeah, I had a mantra over a decade ago that the billable hour is dead, that lawyers just don't know it yet. And had this kind of a dream of taking that on the road and giving that presentation all over the place. This took over instead. But yeah, it's and I had to drive this. I had to create the market for subscription legal. No one was looking for it. I don't know if I would advise other small business owners to do that. It was painful. But now I'm getting, you know, I get calls and texts from people that are saying, hey, I need a legal team that can be there and support me. Where I wasn't, that just didn't exist. And so with a little work, lawyers can create that market, make some awareness with the customers, clients, and they in the end like it. I mean, I don't think anyone really likes paying by the hour. They just don't think there's an option.
Right. And if they were provided one, and a lot of firms are out there doing it, they love it. They in fact, when we did it in my firm in 89, we didn't know what we were doing. But the customers loved it, which is why we stuck with it, because we thought it was a better customer experience.
Yeah, because at least in my business, if you're billing by the hour, to me, there's this inherent conflict, because as the lawyer, I control both the rate and the time. I can make whatever I want to make. The customer can't control that. Right. And they have to be thinking, at least subconsciously, that he might be charging me more than he really had to. That might not really have needed to take that long. And subconsciously, I could be charging them more than I needed to because I know I make more money. So it's really hard then for to be a fiduciary and on their side, helping them make the best possible decisions for their life and business. I think when you're billing that way, again, they just don't realize it yet.
Yeah. One of our colleagues loves to say lawyers are paid not to finish. if they're charging by the hour, you know, at least their incentive not to.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy. Besides what you've already talked about with Ed and what you've mentioned here, what are some of the main advantages to your customer? I know they have access to you. I know they can call you before they do something stupid and you can prevent the fire rather than rushing to it. But what are some other advantages? Has there been any surprises that you've encountered with customers saying, wow, this is really valuable because of this?
Yes, it's the little stuff, right? It's what I always call it, the low-hanging fruit that people aren't doing, or if someone takes care of it for them, suddenly they take a deep breath, the weight comes off their shoulders. This morning, I get a call from an Access client that had received a voicemail from the Texas Comptroller's office, and that's who runs our corporation stuff. And it said that there was a problem with the taxes, but didn't say what the problem was. Call this 800 number. And so they're freaking out that, you know, is this a scam? Is this real? Am I in trouble? So they send me the voice message. I call them back and say, hey, don't worry about this. We'll take care of it. We jump on and figure it out. And they can go back to their business and they don't have to worry because they now know they have a legal team that's taking care of that while they do their business. And the other members of the Access program tell me that's the peace of mind they get by knowing that they can hand off these problems that they don't understand to us and just know that we're dealing with them. They say that's priceless. The other thing that's so huge is the contracts, right? In running a business, you're constantly receiving contracts to sign and you have no idea really what they mean. I mean, some people are more sophisticated and might have some clue, but you aren't trained in those. It's not what you do every day. And if you sign them before having them reviewed, you could be making a mistake. By sending them through us, again, they have peace of mind that if I sign this deal, there's not going to be major problems with it because I've had the Access team look at it. And I think those are two major things that just takes that pressure off and you don't have to worry about it. And then I did a call today, one of our monthly calls with a client who'd gotten a demand letter from an aggressive attorney. And part of the Access program is that if you need to respond to a demand letter, that's included in your package. And so they just dump it on me. I give it to the team and we'll take that off of them and they don't have to communicate with them anymore and we'll help them resolve it. And so it's just that security and peace of mind that you get with those little things. And then there's big things too, like when you're creating new enterprises, you're buying a business. There's all kinds of things we can do that are bigger, but it really seems to be the little small things that just bug you that they don't have to worry about because my team takes care of it for their monthly subscription fee.
Yeah, the convenience, the peace of mind, the frictionless relationship, all that. I wish more professionals understood how valuable that was because we only put a price on things that we do for the customer. You know, that whole fee for service paradigm, which is the rest of the medical community is in, you know, they can only charge when they do something to you, not something for you. And that's a big difference. Like your DPC doc does things for you, not just to you.
Yeah. And I tell my team that we're a law firm and we have a consulting firm, but we're really just a customer in the customer service business. And our job is to make their, like you said, make the friction go away, whatever that takes. And one of our core values is that we solve problems and we do that. You know, it's not money first, it's problem first. Let's solve the problem. If we figure out it wasn't included in the plan, okay, we can deal with that. But if we have a happy client, it's not going to matter.
Right, right. Because what I love about the subscription is it changes your focus from the math of the moment to the lifetime customer value.
Oh, yeah.
You're not worried about the math of the moment. And this is why I think timesheets are so destructive because we feel like we have to make a margin on every 6 minutes that we're spending. And what about the customer lifetime value? It doesn't value that at all.
No, the customer just is fungible. We'll just throw someone else in there and throw hours at them.
Right, because the hours are fungible. It's the same price for every hour and hours an hour. And, you know, I really liked the way that you did your pricing on the website. You tiered it based on, it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you did it like the stage the business was in their life cycle. Like you have a launch, expansion, momentum, guardian. it kind of reminded me of, you know, startup, growth, mature, decline, if you will. I really like the way you did that. And I noticed that you have an initiation fee for every tier. And has that been a hurdle? Have you found that to be a hurdle? Because you don't see that in a lot of subscription models.
I haven't had anyone object to it in years.
Okay.
It could be a hurdle and they're not telling me. If someone doesn't sign on, that may be why. But for us to keep our price the way it is, there's a lot of upfront work that goes into onboarding them, getting up to speed, and because there's usually some kind of critical problem that they're bringing us at when they come in. And sure. So if we don't build it into the front, then we lose money if they don't stay more than a year. And everyone doesn't stay more than a year.
Right.
Most
right.
do. I've never had a problem with it. I've tinkered with the number over the years, and I think we kind of have it at a pretty sweet spot where no one objects to it.
Can people move around in the tiers without having to keep paying the initiation fee?
You know, I've never asked them to up the initiation fee because once they're in the system and we've already onboarded them, it's fine. And so we have people go up and down all the time because they're like, hey, we're getting ready to go into the season where we're going to be doing a bunch of things. Can we move up for a while? No problem. And we also occasionally have you know, entrepreneurs that will run into cash flow issues. And so I don't want to ever hurt anybody. And so we'll put their plan on pause for 90 days. They still have access to us by email and text. And if they have questions, they can ask them. We just don't do any projects until they're ready to come back on board. It's all about the relationship for me. And I want to be talking to these same people 20 years from now and hearing the success stories when they're at Guardian, when everyone's at Guardian level.
That's fantastic. And that's the other great thing about subscription. It gives you that flexibility to pause. Like Scott, during COVID, is that something you jumped out in front of and said, hey, look, if you need to pause, you feel free?
No, I didn't. We actually grew a lot during COVID. People had a ton of questions. Sure. And needed somewhere to get some peace of mind. And so we were constantly updating people. We were using a Facebook group to communicate with the members to keep them apprised of what was happening in their area with the different updates and restrictions that were coming out. And then they were able to ask us questions that were, you know, did they fall under this mandate or, you know, and so I didn't have really anyone go off during that time period. Instead, we were growing pretty rapidly.
That's fantastic. Well, Scott, this is great. It's flying by, unfortunately. We're up against our next break. And folks, I'd like to remind you, if you want to contact me or Ed, send us an email to asktsoe@verisage.com. Do check out our Patreon channel where you can get access to our bonus shows. You can do that at patreon.com/TSOE. That channel is now sponsored by 90 Minds. Be kind to your mind. Hire one. You can check their work out at 90minds.com. And now a word from our sponsors.
Enjoying our shows and can't get enough of us? Follow us on Instagram at Voice America Talk Radio and see what we're cooking up for you.
Sage provides accountants with compliance, reporting, and analytic solutions to do more for their clients. These solutions include education programs such as the Sage Accountants Network Client Advisory Service Program. This program delivers the tools to create, package, price, market, and deliver additional services to clients, increasing your profitability and delivering more value to your clients. Let Sage help you grow your business by visiting sageaccountantsnetwork.com.
Have you ever listened to an online radio show that changed your life? I'm required to say that I have. Have you ever stopped listening to an online radio show because the commercials were mind-numbingly repetitive? Of course you haven't, because you're here right now. Look, you don't have to listen to me anymore. There's a commercial-free version of this show, and it only costs $10 a month. And for $15 a month, you get no commercials plus bonus content. Go to patreon.com/TSOE, subscribe now, and be free. You're worth it.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio.
voiceamerica.com.
You are tuned into The Soul of Enterprise with Ron Baker and Ed Klass. To find out more about our show, visit us on the web at thesoulofenterprise.com. You can also chat with us on Twitter using hashtag AskTSOE. Now, back to The Soul of Enterprise.
And we are back with Scott Reeb of Reeb Law. And Scott, I wanted to ask you another couple of questions about your pricing model, which I think is great. First, how strict are you about the revenue ranges? You say, you know, this is for revenue between zero and 25, 250,000, et cetera. I mean, do you say, show me your financial statement? So,
no, I don't even ask them what their revenue number is. I go through it with them, show them what the different levels are, and let them tell me basically where they feel more comfortable. After the consultation, I'm able to kind of figure out where I think they fit without getting into their numbers. And then they can tell me which one fits better. Because sometimes they're right there almost at 250 or right over 250. And I'd rather them be comfortable. We can always grow later. And so I'll back them up a level.
Right. You're not going to say, hey, don't grow. Because if you earn a dollar more, we're going to bump you up next year. So that's really just a guidepost for people on your to be able to come in and say, okay, this is where I think I approximately am from a marketing perspective.
Yeah, it's really most important at the bottom level because I don't want people in launch mode forever. And so it's like, let's get to that over that 250 and gross revenue, and then you should go up to the next level. But it's just kind of guidelines as my team is consulting with people to see where you fit.
Mm-hmm. So one objection that I've gotten to people when I've talked is what about folks who, you know, they come on for 1 month, they need what they need done, then they jump off and then they come back on and then jump off and then come back on and jump off. What's been your experience with that?
I've seen a lot of that. We now require a 12-month commitment for your first year.
Okay.
So if you come in, you're in for a year. And then at the end of the year, you have to give us 30 days notice and you can be out.
And is that year
with cause for any, you know, if they have cause to end it, then they can always end the contract. But that solved a big part of that problem.
Is it paid up front or do they still pay monthly?
98% of our people pay monthly. I do have a few clients that want to pay it at the end of the year, so they can just take the write off now and
dump cash. Yeah. So it's a year contract, but you still, it's still $500 a month at the lowest level. So you're not going to, got correct. It. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yep. So talk to me a little bit about Zig Ziglar. When I first moved to Texas about 20 years ago, I had the good fortune to be able to go over once to Prestonwood Baptist Church there and see Zig live and in person. He was fantastic. I remember some of the things. One of the things that he said during this presentation was, I'd rather apologize for my price once than quality forever. So you have a relationship with that organization. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's a fantastic organization, and I missed Zig, getting to meet Zig live by about 2 years. After forming the Access Plan, I knew I needed to have a niche. I mean, just being the small business lawyer was too broad. And so I decided that I wanted to help speakers, trainers, coaches, people whose mission was to help other people, then make my reach become exponential. So I ran to a lawyer that was certifying other lawyers on how to do that and went through some training with him. And then our homework was go to a live event. Well, the only live event I was aware of in Texas, the only name I knew was Ziglar, because my dad was in sales and was a Ziglar guy. And I had listened to tapes when I was younger. And so I knew Zig. And so that's what I Googled. And I didn't realize he'd passed away, but they were doing some Born to Win events. And it was his son, Tom Ziglar, and his buddy, Howard Partridge, both of whom are mentors of mine now. I went to Houston to this event to take notes, met both of those guys, was super impressed with their program, and was needing a ride to the airport. And Howard Partridge says, who's taking you to the airport when we're done? And I'm like, I'll call the cab. This was before Uber was really popular. And he's like, no, don't do that. Tom will take you. I'm like, Tom who? He's like, Tom Ziglar. I'm like, okay. So I ride around Houston traffic for about 2 hours with Tom. And we form a relationship. And about a month later, I sit down with him for lunch in Lewisville, Texas, and show him my plans and get to the end and just ask him, you know, Mr. Ziegler, is there any reason you wouldn't do business with me today? And then I shut up. And it was silent for a few minutes. It seemed like a long time. And then he said, no, if you'll give me a contract, we'll join. And so they became Access members fairly early in the program. And since then, I have had the pleasure of working for the family and being a Ziegler certified trainer. And now I can teach Zig's trainings. And then Tom Ziegler actually wrote the foreword for my book, The Shatterproof Entrepreneur, that just launched last week. And it's just been a tremendous journey. And now I can't imagine if that hadn't happened, but it really changed the trajectory of where I was going.
Well, and that's what I wanted to talk a little bit about next. And one of the unique things on your site is this shatterproof strategy session. Not going to get that with most lawyers. So talk a little bit about what shatterproof strategy is.
Yeah. And I think I mentioned this earlier, but I believe small business is the best vehicle to achieve your life goals and dreams. And this is an amazing time to be alive because there's so many opportunities and ways to have small businesses that didn't exist 10 years ago, 20 years ago when we were starting out. And so every vehicle I've ever seen has a windshield, and that windshield has two purposes. One is for vision, obviously, and the other is protection. So things don't hit you in the face while you're driving and knock you off the road. And I want to help them build their business vehicles in a way that those rocks that hit us all as we're going down Highway 75 over there in Allen don't break our windshield and hit us in the face. Instead, we've all had this happen, right? It marks your windshield, maybe puts a little star, maybe even puts a crack in it, but you can keep driving. And then when you reach your destination, then you pull over, call the glass doctor, they come fix it, and you're back on the road. And so you've got a business that is shatterproof, which means it will bend and not break. And to do that, you've got to do some work. You know, Michael Gerber's book, The E-Myth Revisited, is kind of one of the things that launched me on my journey of building a business instead of a practice. He says that we all had these entrepreneurial seizures where technicians have these seizures. And in that seizure, you jump over a bunch of steps that you should have taken and your foundation's not right. And you've got to go back and fix your foundation to build a solid business that's unbreakable. And so we have six phases to building the shatterproof process. That's what I cover in my book, The Shatterproof Entrepreneur, and on the podcast of the same name.
And so you have actually strategy sessions for this. Is that something that you've added relatively new to your offering? Ron and I like to talk about it as plussing, or is that something that's always been a part of what you've been doing?
It's been a part of it for about 10 years.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think it's because I'm hanging out with so many coaches. and so I've really adopted more of the coaching model and consider myself a legal coach, which has some different meanings, but we set it up to where it's just, we're trying to bring down barriers, and it's not a legal consultation or it's a strategy session. We're going to talk about a problem and we're going to give you a strategy to solve your problem. They may go do it on their own or they may use us to solve it. And either way, they walk away with value. And that's my purpose on this planet. And so we do strategy sessions.
So has it gotten meta on you yet? Are you helping another lawyer do it yet?
I've talked to several lawyers about it. No one's been willing to pay me the amount of money that I want to help them yet.
Yeah, and plus, when you tell them that they got to get rid of their timesheet, they're like, yeah, you're crazy.
yeah, they don't want to do that. And once I tell them, kind of walk through what you have to do, they don't want to do it. It's not super easy, right? Because you end up having to, you end up with two firms for a little while. You've got your regular billable by the hour firm, and then you've got your subscription firm. And at some point they kind of meet, and then you have to start dropping the other one off. And it's a lot to manage if you don't have the right people with you and if you're not working with a coach, I think it would be really difficult.
Yeah, that is referred to. Teen So, who wrote a book called Subscribe, refers to that as the swallowing the fish. Is that because you
exactly?
Yep. There's up and down. So, how often do you go about changing the stuff that's in your options? Are you always adding new stuff? I noticed on your website it says 2024 access plans. So, what kind of tweaking do you look to do on a yearly basis? Let's say.
Yeah, at least yearly we tweak it, but every once in a while during the year, it'll become obvious that there's something that should have been in the plans that wasn't, or there's something in it that we don't want to do anymore as part of the plans. And if that happens, then I will change it in the middle of the year. We've never gone back to a member and said, hey, you've got to adjust your plan. This is coming off of it. You are where you are, but people that come on after that then have a different plan, which does create some problems for me, because then we're trying to track which plan are you on? Is that included or not? And that does create a few issues, but our technology systems have gotten pretty good at helping us with that.
Yeah, I think that's so important that for some people, I refer to it after Captain Sullenberger, who after he flew the plane into the Hudson, said that he had a successful crash, right? So what is it that you're doing to successfully crash things? What's something that you successfully crashed? What was something that you had on the plane? You said, you know what? Nope, not doing that anymore.
Yeah, we used to include trademarks in some of the lower level plans, and people were taking advantage of it.
Mm. I really do think that that's so important for people to recognize that they have to be able to let stuff go if it's not working out for either party, both either side of the arrangement.
Yeah, because the tendency is when you're building these subscription models is to try to cram as much into them as you can to create this big value stack so that people will be blown away and sign up. And so, and you should do that, but every time you do that, you're going to put things in there that you're later going to regret. And so then you learn by fire and you tweak it a little bit. Like I said, hopefully year by year, but sometimes you have to do it faster, because if you don't, if you start growing rapidly, you'll get crushed.
So true. Well, Scott, this has been fantastic. Ron's going to take you the rest of the way home, but just want to remind our listeners that they can get a hold of Ron or me by sending an email to asktsoe@verisage.com. Do us a favor and go out and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast player of choice. Many of our listeners use Apple Podcasts or whatever they're listening to, and it's great if you go out there and subscribe, so that helps other people find the show as well. And also make sure that you will never miss an episode as well. Right now, a word from our sponsors, including my employer, Sage.
A little birdie told me Voice America is on X. Follow us at Voice America TRN.
Sage provides accountants with compliance, reporting, and analytic solutions to do more for their clients. These solutions include education programs such as the Sage Accountants Network Client Advisory Service Program. This program delivers the tools to create, package, price, market, and deliver additional services to clients, increasing your profitability and delivering more value to your clients. Let Sage help you grow your business by visiting sageaccountantsnetwork.com.
Have you ever been so annoyed by a commercial for a $5 ebook that you were willing to pay $10 to never hear it again? I sure have. Hello, I'm Greg Kite. Over the last several years, you've come to hate me, and I hate me too. By now, you know that for $5, you can get a copy of Ron and Ed's book. What you might not know is, for twice that much every month for forever, you can stop hearing me plug Ron and Ed's book, which totally makes sense, like the Diamond Water Paradox. Go to patreon.com/TSOE and subscribe today. Please, for the love of God, make it stop!
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned into The Soul of Enterprise with Ron Baker and Ed Klass. To find out more about our show, visit us on the web at thesoulofenterprise.com. You can also chat with us on Twitter using #AskTSOE. Now, back to The Soul of Enterprise.
Well, welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Scott Reeb of Reeb Law, who runs on a subscription basis. And one of the things that's interesting about subscription Scott, as I'm sure you know, is the accounting is different. It's more of a forward-looking income statement because it starts with annual recurring revenue and ends with annual recurring revenue, you know, going forward. And also the KPIs that you look at change as well. And there's very well-established KPIs for subscription. And I'm just curious, what are some of the main KPIs that you look at? What's on your dashboard?
Yeah, I'm always wanting to look at how many new members we have each month, how many people go on pause each month, how many cancel, and then what our average monthly revenue is our monthly recurring revenue, and then the projections for the year. And that's kind of what I look at every month to manage the subscription ship. And then I'm sure there's other things I should be looking at. I obviously took accounting as a business major, but I run from that stuff as much as I can. I do not like that stuff. I can read a financial statement, but would rather not. And so I probably should have others, but those are the ones that we concentrate on, and it's served us pretty well. The churn is, if you're listening, the churn is when you're losing people at the bottom of your subscription. It's a constant, and I'm just trying to make sure that we're adding enough more at the top to make up for it. But we have team meetings every week on Wednesdays to talk about these issues, because I also want to make that drip smaller, so we're losing less and less people. And so if it's something we can control, then we're trying to figure out, why are they leaving? Is it because something happened to their business that's out of our control? Did we not give them the customer service they needed? What happened in that? And so we're asking questions. We're working on setting up a survey system for people that exit so we can get better information. But just internally, how can we do it better? But if you could eliminate that churn or make it as small as possible, then we don't have to do quite as much sales every year to hit some of our goals. Right. But it's totally different than running the firm was 10 years ago, when it was all about how many hours were we going to bill and collect on.
Right. You anticipated my next question. I was going to ask you the strategies that you've deployed to reduce churn, because that always comes up. And it's true, churn is an issue, but churn is an issue in any business, even hourly. Right.
It's more obvious though in this model.
Absolutely, because it's on your dashboard. I mean, it's right there on your income statement, essentially, if you think about it.
Yeah, and I've got two customers, so I have the people that are members of our program, and then they may be listening in the other room. Then the people on the Access team are kind of my second customers, and sure. So I've got to balance. If I make their job too hard, trying to provide this excellent service and first class service to the members, then I've got a problem there. And so we really work hard to try to find efficiencies for them as they provide the service and leverage technology and automation as much as possible for that purpose. But then you're fighting on the other end. The clients are like, well, I just want to call and tell you what I want. Well, that's not efficient. We really need you to use the form, fill out the form so it creates the project so that it jumps on everyone's radar. And most of our clients are pretty good and flexible and will work with our systems. But to run 100 plus small businesses through a subscription program that are all having projects on a daily, monthly basis, you've got to use systems and you've got to leverage technology. You could run a different subscription. I mean, you could run one with 10 clients and it wouldn't be that hard to manage. That just wouldn't be helping enough people for me.
Right. What are some of the technologies that you use that are in your stack to manage some of these processes?
Yeah, so we're using Asana to manage our projects, and then we have to use Zapier a lot to connect it to other things, because we do still have Clio hanging around our necks. Nothing wrong with Clio, but we still have it there because we still have a trust account that we use occasionally. And so to reduce some of the manual entry, we use Zapier to connect things. Then we use Slack for internal communication. We're using Sync right now as our cloud server, so that we have a place that can hold everything that we do. We are basically paperless. If paper comes in, it gets scanned and shredded immediately. We don't have any files offsite anymore. Everything is on the cloud. And we designed it that way even before the pandemic, because I want to be able to work from anywhere in the world that I where I am. And with the technology that we have now, I can. I will say our stack's a little, I think, too big, and we're working to try to shrink that to help, because I, like you said, that my second customer base being my team, you when you onboard someone with five or six different types of software, it's hard.
Yeah.
When you've got someone that's picked them up over months and years, it's not that big of a deal. But when someone comes in and they've got 2 weeks to figure out all these software packages that we're trying to, it's a big problem.
Sure. And the other thing that always pops up in subscription, and I think this kind of goes into the churn question too, is that whole onboarding process in the first 90 days.
Yeah.
A lot of subscription consultants will tell you, boy, that first 90 days is critical. Get them to get used to your system, even start using it. Early value that's demonstrated and created is really good to keep them locked in. What's kind of been your experience with the onboarding process?
It's frustrating. We have a pretty robust onboarding process, but a lot of clients don't cooperate. They sign up, they're excited to sign up, and then they don't show up for their onboarding. And so we chase them to make them go through our onboarding because this is good for you. You've got to go through this onboarding. And so that's frustrating. And I put a lot of pressure on our team because you mentioned earlier that we have an initiation fee. And so the clients are spending a bunch of money up front. So we have got to wow them in that first 90 days. For me, the first 30 days is critical. We have got to hit a home run with some project in the first 30 days so they can see that, wow, these people can take care of me in a great way. And that's okay. What I lose sleep over. That's what I wake up in the middle of the night going, hey, has Billy Bob gone through the orientation, and have we knocked one over the fence for them yet?
Yeah. You know, Scott, it's so funny. The DPC doc said the same thing. We had to re-educate our customers to come and see us when they felt fine, you know, and that's been a real struggle for a lot of them, mm-hmm. You know, because you only call your doctor when you're sick. So, the other question, and this is moving up now to a macro level, why do you think the billable hour has stayed around so long? I mean, Ed and I just got an article from a lawyer up in Canada, one of our listeners, Keith MacArthur, and all of these consultants and lawyers in these firms are saying, even with AI, the billable hour is not going anywhere. You think it'll ever go away in the legal profession?
No, I don't think it will ever go away. Not completely. I think there'll be some people still doing it. I think the main reason, and this comes from a partner I had years and years ago, and he's gone now, God rest his soul. But one time I was asking him what he wanted. A client was coming on board. I said, what do you want your rate to be so we can set up the engagement? And he's like, I don't care. I mean, what do you mean you don't care? As long as I can determine the amount of hours I spend, I don't care what the rate is.
Wow.
I'm like, okay. So that's why it's never going to die, because you've got older lawyers sitting in firms with a bunch of lawyers underneath them that are churning out hours, and all they care about is what results from those hours, and that's big money. I mean, it's insane amounts of money that is being churned out. I mean, I do occasionally, we'll still do divorces for some of my business clients because I have the experience. And if they have an uncontested divorce and I can make it easy for them, then we'll do a flat fee and take care of that. And I've had one recently it's no longer uncontested. There's a disagreement, and I keep trying to take care of it for them. But we were doing the math earlier in the week, like if this had been the old days and we were doing it by the hour, they would have already paid us $25,000.
Wow.
So there's, wow. I mean, there's big money in by the hour.
Sure.
It's just, sure. I'm getting where I kind of have a moral and ethical issue with it. And so when we do by the hour, I way undercharge. Because I don't like keeping track of my time, so I just don't. Right, and so right. They can take advantage of me and I feel better about it. but I don't see it going away because people, there's people in charge that are greedy and they're not going to give it up because they aren't truly clients. They aren't client centric. They aren't focused on the long-term relationship. It's just about the almighty dollar.
Right, right. Progress happens funeral by funeral, maybe. So we'll see. Well, Scott, thank you so much. This has been wonderful. Been great to talk to you, and keep up the great work. And Ed, what do we have next week?
Next week, Ron, we're going to do one of our subscription update shows, talk about what's going on in the world of subscription that we're seeing in the major news media.
Excellent. I'll see you in 167 hours.
This has been The Soul of Enterprise, Business in the Knowledge Economy, sponsored by Sage, transforming the way people think and work, enabling their organizations to thrive. Join us next week on Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, that's noon Pacific. In the meantime, please feel free to visit us at www.thesoulofenterprise.com.